This is a previously recorded interview with Jay Blakesburg, who is a visual anthropologist, a San Francisco Bay photographer, and has done 300 plus Rolling Stone magazine photographs. Also host of Photos with Stories, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Jay?
Sure. Hey, how's it going, Holly? Nice to hear from you. During the pandemic, I started an online photography talk show called Photos with Stories. So currently, we're sort of on hiatus with it, but you can find a bunch of them on YouTube. I think most of them are posted. If you look up Photos with Stories by Jay Blakesburg, there's actually a couple of really cool ones. So for all you photo buffs out there, check it out. There's one really cool one with a guy named Bob Barsotti who worked for Bill Graham for 30 or 40 years, really long time, and just sort of the history of Bay Area rock and roll. We do show photographs in it that are historically accurate to what he's talking about, but he wasn't a photographer. He's just a badass rock and roll Bay Area guy.
Fantastic. Well, Jay Blakesburg, thank you so much for joining us on the radio today.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, and when I started doing some digging, I realized we probably have way more overlap than time allows for today.
That usually is the case, so yes.
Yeah, friends who haven't met yet.
Indeed.
I'd like to thank Hal Gill, who introduced you to me through an interview that I did with David Gans, who does Tales from the Golden Road and also The Grateful Dead Hour, which we run on our radio station every Tuesday. And
excellent.
Serendipity had it that, you know, Hal was really inspired to get you and I together. And I think
Hal is a connector. He loves to do that. And we thank him for being the great amplifier of the signal and a good connector of people.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the way we met was through a note that a friend of ours left on my car 30 years ago. He said, "I like your Dead stickers. Do you want to trade tapes?" And so this friend and I have been friends ever since. And I just happened to mention that during David's interview. And now here we are talking. So that's how it's done. That's the kind of.
And was that Hal who left you that note, or was it somebody else?
It was a friend, a mutual friend of Hal's and mine. His name is Tom Wardell.
Nice. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, love it. And that was in Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Nice. I saw the Grateful Dead in Baltimore, Maryland in May of 1979.
And did you have to hitchhike back?
I did hitchhike back from that show only because the night before we saw the band in Hampton, Virginia. And those were like the early days of Brent. I think that Virginia show the night before Baltimore was maybe Brent's third Grateful Dead concert. I think there was one in California, one in North Carolina, then Hampton, then Baltimore. So Baltimore was number four for Brent. And as we were leaving the parking lot the night before in Hampton, Virginia, the guy that was driving totaled his car in the parking lot. He was a little bit inebriated. You know, and I was 17 years old. So like when you're 17 and getting in a van with a drunk driver, you're not saying, "Hey, I don't think we should drink and drive." You know, you're just like, "Here we go, Baltimore." You know, so thank God we never got on the freeway because I might not even be here to tell you the story. I might be just completely deceased for the last 40 years. So we had a hitchhike from Virginia to Baltimore. And then the next day after that Baltimore show was a big giant free concert on the front steps of the Capitol in Washington, D.C. And it was an anti-nuke rally. It was really less of a free concert, more of a big anti-nuke rally. And there were speakers like Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden, but also Joni Mitchell performed and Graham Nash. And I found a press pass on the ground. This is kind of a story that people have heard before, but I'll tell it anyway. I was walking around kind of wishing and hoping that I could get closer to the stage and closer to these people. And as I was walking around, I looked on the ground and I found a press pass and I just walked backstage. And then I walked on stage right on the edge of the stage to take pictures of, you know, Graham and Jackson Brown and Joni Mitchell performing. And then I turned around and there's Bob Weir and Brent Midland standing there. And I went over and talked to them and took some photos of them. And that was my first encounter with a member of the Grateful Dead one-on-one. And I was 17 years old. And that was on May 6th, 1979.
You have found yourself in the right place at the right time, my friend.
Yeah, you know, in the early days, a lot of it was putting yourself out there to be in the right place at the right time. And nowadays, it's just trying to be in the right place at the right time, and, you know, and making sure that, you know, I can be there to do what I do and capture what I capture using my camera. So, but yes, I have found myself in the right place at the right time over and over again for the last 40 plus years. And I feel very, very fortunate and lucky that I've been able to do that.
Yeah. Well, did you have a camera that you were already into photography before that, and you just had a camera around your neck at all times, or like Polaroid, or what were you doing?
So I, the legend goes that, which is a true story, that I borrowed my dad's camera to photograph the Grateful Dead at a Giants stadium in September of 1978. Even though this is a previously recorded broadcast today, we recorded it on 11/24/78. Today, 11/24/2021. I'm sorry, we recorded it on 11/24/2021. On 11/24/78, I saw the Grateful Dead at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey. So 43 years ago today, I guess, I was seeing the Grateful Dead. And that was the second time I photographed the Grateful Dead. And at that concert, I actually used my own camera that my dad had previously bought me. He had actually bought me the camera before the Meadowlands show, but I only had a 50 millimeter lens. And so he loaned me his Pentax with a couple of longer lenses. And I shot that show at the Meadowlands Giant Stadium, and that was the first time I photographed the Grateful Dead. By the time I had my camera, you know, was it always around my neck? I wish it was, but no. But did I take a lot of pictures? Yeah. You know, I was trying to find my place in the script as a young teenager, and it sort of became part of my identity of who I was. And oddly enough, it's still kind of part of my identity, who I am 40-something years later. So I did take pictures as a teenager, and a lot of it was pictures of us smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol and doing drugs and being passed out and doing stupid things that probably should have killed us and made us not be here and available at the moment, because our lives were filled with adolescent stupidity that should have killed us numerous times. But somehow the stars aligned, and we got to follow the highway, the moon, the clouds, and the stars, and ended up here and are still alive to talk about it and tell the story. And for me, I have a lot of it on film, and so I'm able to scan that film and share it on the interwebs via Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and things like that.
Well, those are good places to find you. So the people who are listening, of course, are on a terrestrial dial or streaming online. So they can't see some of the magnificent work that I've seen and that you've done. But they're out there. And there's yeah, books and
so
links.
On Instagram, I'm just at Jay Blakesburg. But also there's a second Instagram page that my daughter curates for me, and that's called Retro Blakesburg. So at Retro Blakesburg. And the cool thing about Retro Blakesburg, so my daughter curates it, and it's an Instagram page that is just photographs that I shot on film, nothing that I've shot digitally. And so that's her thing, her baby. She chooses what to post and asks me about stories about these things and posts that information. And out of that, we created a coffee table book called Retro Blakesburg, Volume 1, The Film Archives. And we are just about done with that book. I'm hoping that I can ship that book to the printer before the end of the year. It's going to be close. It might be in early January. So that book will come out sometime in springish of 2022. And that's my next big book project coming out. So, you know, you can learn about that on the Retro Blakesburg page or the Jay Blakesburg Instagram page. And on Facebook, I'm Jay Blakesburg Photography. So those are kind of the places that you can find me and kind of dig in a little bit deeper into my archive and what I've been doing for the last 40-something years, 44 years, 43 years.
Do you still have Rock Out Books as your publishing company?
Yes. Uh-huh. So I self-publish all my coffee table books that I put out. And I put out my first book in 2002. And that was a book on the Grateful Dead called Between the Dark and Light, the Grateful Dead photography of Jay Blakesburg. And I really loved the process of making a book and publishing a book. And so after I published that book with a big publisher here in the United States, I decided to form my own publishing company called Rock Out Books. And I started publishing books under my own imprint. And I've done a couple of books for other people, but essentially the books that I publish on Rock Out Books are mine. And that's so Retro Blakesburg will come out on Rock Out Books. And Rock Out Books, you can buy them at Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and your small independent local bookstore will carry them, or you can ask them for it, and you can support those businesses. But you can buy my books at any of those places. My most current book that's out right now is called Jerry Garcia's Secret Space of Dreams, and that came out pretty much exactly 2 years ago, just before the pandemic. And that book is still available. There still is, there's a healthy amount of copies of that book left. There's, I think, a little bit less than 2,000 copies. Maybe there's like 1,500 or 1,600 copies of that book floating around. So yeah, go out and do your holiday shopping on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or anywhere else where fine books are sold, and ask for Jerry Garcia's Secret Space of Dreams. Or you can order it at my rockoutbooks.com website, of course, as well, if you want to get a signed copy directly from me. But yeah, so I self-publish books, and so Retro Blakesburg will come out on Rock Out Books, and I'm working on another really cool book that is not my artwork, but me and my daughter are doing this book as well, and it's a book called Illegal Images, and it's the history of blotter acid art. And I'm doing it with a guy named Mark McLeod here in San Francisco, and it's his collection, and he has one of the foremost important collections of blotter acid art, as well as the ephemera that kind of goes along with it. So he has some of the original artwork that the blotter was made from, and a lot of the film that was used to make the paper and print the paper back in the old days when they had to shoot film to do printing on a printing press. And so we are actively working on that book, and that book will come out, I'm hoping, at the end of 2022, but it might be a 2023 book. This is a slow process. There's just so much information and so much artwork and so much cool stuff. So that's another project that I'm working on with my daughter, is the Illegal Images, the blotter art history book, Mark McLeod.
I believe I might have met Mark at Bicycle Day. I'm friends with Alex and Allison Gray, and I was down in Bicycle Day in 2011. And I'm pretty sure that he was there.
Yeah, Mark and Alex and Allison are very close friends. And yes, and they've known each other for a long bit. I have no doubt that you met Mark. And the Institute of Illegal Images is a eye-opening, mind-boggling little mini museum here in San Francisco of just incredible pop culture artifacts that surround the psychedelic scene that we've all been part of for a good chunk of our lives.
Yeah, well, and that leads me to asking about Tim Leary. I grew up in Baltimore and was in Catonsville, right next to Spring Grove, where Tim Leary did a lot of his work. The high school I went to was literally like two blocks away. And
nice.
I was like, wait a minute, you did some work with Tim Leary? Like, you've really made the rounds.
You're asking me if I've done work with Tim Leary. Yes, absolutely. So, and I never knew that Tim Leary had any kind of presence in Baltimore or that area. Actually, I did not know that about his history. But so for me, as a photographer, you know, pretty early on, I always had my radar up for photographing or being around some of these pop culture icons that came out of the psychedelic era. So Leary, Ginsberg, Kesey, Owsley, William Burroughs, Abby Hoffman, other beat writers, Terrence McKenna, so on and so forth. Chet Helms, the psychedelic poster artists of, the big five guys, Mouse, Kelly, Griffin, Moscoso, Wilson, all of these people have always been on my radar. And Leary was coming to San Francisco to do some sort of lecture type thing, and I got an assignment from a magazine to do a portrait of him. And so he came to a photo studio that I had used at the time down in South of Market in San Francisco. And I did my first portrait of Tim Leary. And then I did another second portrait of him when he was doing like another art type show here in San Francisco just before he died. He had lost a lot of weight. He looked very gaunt. So that was the last time. And then I had a couple of other interactions with him. I actually have some photographs of him and Ken Kesey together. I have some photographs of him with the guys in the band Primus that he was at a show they were playing at, a festival called Lollapalooza that used to travel around the country as opposed to just being in Chicago. And so I've got, you know, like a quickie portrait of Tim Leary at Lollapalooza. So I've had like, you know, three or four or five little interactions with Leary over the years. But it's the same thing with, you know, Owsley and Kesey. Like, I was, you know, dying to get a portrait of Kesey and finally got him in front of my camera. I was doing some photographs at a Jack Kerouac benefit for, it was actually a benefit for his daughter, Jan Kerouac, who was fighting tooth and nail to claim some ownership of the Jack Kerouac archive because, you know, the Kerouac archive, I believe, is owned by relatives of, you know, a wife of a wife of a wife of a third marriage of, you know, it's like 10 times removed as opposed to his daughter who is a blood heir. And so they were raising some money and a bunch of people were speaking and I think there was some music and Kesey was there and a bunch of other beat icons came and spoke. And it was here in San Francisco and I set up like a photo studio backstage somewhere and I would bring people in to do portraits of them. And I corralled Kesey into my little room and did like a quick portrait of Kesey, you know, with studio lighting. So I've been fortunate to get, you know, a handful of these kind of important icons in the psychedelic world in front of my camera.
Yeah, you have. I would say fortunate is an understatement.
That's another book that I was working on, a book called Psychedelic Icons, and it was going to be photographs of people that I have shot that fit that bill. So a lot of those same people that I just talked about, you know, the poster artists and Kesey, Leary, Owsley, Terrence McKenna, you know, Chet Helms, and you know, the Jefferson Airplane, members of the Grateful Dead, different musicians that were all sort of these you know, important figures in the psychedelic revolution. And unfortunately, the woman who was writing the text for my book got COVID and then became a long hauler and is slowly recuperating. But we will get back to that book, but it's been backburnered for now because we weren't able to meet all of our deadlines for text because she was unable to fulfill those deadlines, you know, meet those deadlines.
Yeah.
But she's a dear friend, so I'm 100% supportive of her, you know, getting her health back and not worrying about putting out a book of psychedelic icons. It'll happen.
Yeah, right. Point. I mean, we've all got our priorities, I suppose, yeah. You know, and that's the one that stands out, people first.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you would mention, part of the reason I was down at Bicycle Day is because I'm also friends with Jonathan Singer, who runs the visuals for the Dead & Company right now.
Sure. Well, I think he's on hiatus on that. I think he did 3 or 4 years with them, but the most current tour he did not. I think he might have created some of the visuals that they still used, but he was not on tour with the band this summer. I don't know if it was a COVID thing or just a visual thing or something they wanted to change up. But yeah, Jonathan's done a lot of really great, super psychedelic stuff.
Yeah, I was fortunate to meet him early on. There was a production company here in this town in Ashland, because I'm in Ashland, Oregon, called Sugar Time Presents. And they brought Maceo Parker and a bunch of other really cool funk musicians here. And I was able to paint, because I'm a visual artist, so I was able to paint live for Maceo Parker while I was on roller skates. And Jonathan Singer and I became friends, and so he ran my art on the big screen while Maceo Parker was performing, while I was painting, while I was on roller skates. So we've had some fun.
Yeah, that sounds like an Escher drawing or something. The roller painting and the roller skates with the band and
know, and then so, visuals by Jonathan Singer.
An infinity loop that never ends.
Exactly. Quite fun. But
cool. Yeah. No, I love Ashland. It's been a hot minute since I've been up there. I have some friends that are growers in the Applegate Valley, just down below you. And I think it's below you, or is that above you? I don't remember. I think it's below you, right?
They're north of us, Applegate.
Applegate. So
actually, northwest-ish, I guess.
Got it. Williams, Oregon, particularly. I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Williams.
So, yeah.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, they're north of you. That's right. They're closer to Medford, right?
Yes.
Yeah, got it. All right. Got my geography straight. But yeah, Ashland's a beautiful place, and I have some friends who live there, and always love passing through.
There was also an overlap with you and ALO and Tea Leaf Green and Mill Valley. A friend of mine, Carson Bench, who was another host here on KSKQ. He has a show called Latitude 42, which is our latitude here in Ashland.
Okay.
He worked with ALO and Tea Leaf Green as a booking agent for a while down in Mill Valley. And he worked as a bartender down there. And I'm thinking, you guys had to have overlapped somewhere in there.
So I'm not sure if I know that person. I might if I saw him. But yeah, so ALO are all really good friends of mine. I've shot several album packages for them, CD packages. Actually, Lebo, the lead guitarist in ALO, I actually saw him perform last night at the Sweetwater in Mill Valley at a benefit with Bob Weir and Lucas Nelson. And that was a pretty smoking jam. And Tea Leaf Green, actually, Josh, the lead singer, a guitar player, actually lives in Ashland, Oregon these days, I believe. And they are also dear friends of mine. And a band that I really, really always loved. They don't really play that much. They do play. I know they played somewhat recently, or at least I know they were trying to. I don't know if it ever happened because of COVID or not. Great bands, and both, all incredible musicians, and, love their music dearly and love them as people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Well, and you were also mentioning David Byrne and the Talking Heads, and my mom went to high school in Baltimore at Lansdowne High School, and David Byrne had a locker next to my mom in high school.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah, I saw the American Utopia on Broadway just before the pandemic, which is incredible. But yeah, I've been a big fan of the Talking Heads since about 1982, and I've had a couple of really great opportunities to work with David Byrne. I've done portraits of him a couple of different times, but I think that I might be the only person to have ever done a portrait of the whole band, the Talking Heads, post-breakup. And that was when they got back together in San Francisco for the 15th anniversary of the movie Stop Making Sense. And I got an assignment from Rolling Stone magazine, which you had mentioned earlier in my intro. I've done 300 assignments for Rolling Stone magazine, or somewhere in that range, I think is what you were trying to say there back then. So I got an assignment to do a portrait of the whole band of the Talking Heads, and that was 15 years after Stop Making Sense. And so, yeah, David is a very fascinating, incredibly creative individual, as is the rest of the band. And I've become friends with Jerry Harrison, the other keyboard guitar player in the band. And then Chris and Tina, obviously the drummer and bass player, live on the East Coast in Connecticut. But I haven't seen them in many, many years.
Well, thanks for the clarification. Yes. 300 plus assignments. That makes way, way better sense.
Yeah, it's all good. But yeah, I love the Talking Heads. And, my photo shoots with David were great. The first time he came to my studio in San Francisco, he did a book many years ago called Bicycle Diaries. I think that whenever he traveled on tour, he always had a folding bicycle that he traveled with. I guess it was on the bus or maybe in the equipment truck. I'm not really sure how they traveled, but he would explore all the different cities that he would visit when he was on tour, as opposed to sitting in a hotel room, which I think that's a much better use of your time. And so he was scheduled to do a portrait photo shoot at my studio and came up and rang the doorbell and had his bike helmet on. And my assistant answered the door and handed him a package because he thought he was a bike messenger. Back in the days of bike messengers, when we used to messenger proof sheets and slides and photographs around San Francisco to clients. And David said, "Oh, no, I'm here for a photo shoot. My name is David, and I'm not a bike messenger." It was a pretty funny moment. So.
Oh, I bet. Well, and I've recently discovered and embraced the fact that he has said that autism/Asperger's is his superpower. And
okay,
so that makes a lot of sense. You know, back when my mom was in high school with him, she said, "Man, what an odd creature he was. Very quiet, not really."
Well, there's a lot of really creative musicians that are definitely on the spectrum in some way.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I mean, these people travel on a very high frequency and they're very creative and brilliant. And obviously we all know there's, you know, many, many high functioning, autistic people. And, I mean, I don't know a lot about it, but, you know, you can tell that some of these people are definitely on the spectrum, and I will not name names.
No. Yeah.
But I think that it adds to their brilliance and their ability to create, on a level that is, you know, above the level that us mere mortals can create on.
Yeah. I think that it's just coming more into light now, the mental health of people. And I wouldn't have mentioned David's name if it wasn't something he was proud of, you know?
Right. Yeah, interesting. I never knew that. But yeah, so David, and it's funny. So I went to Evergreen. I used to live in Olympia, Washington. So I am a one-time Pacific Northwest person. And when I was doing that photo shoot with the whole band, with the Talking Heads for Rolling Stone, David was the first guy to get there, and I told him a funny story that when I was in college in Olympia, in 83, just a few months after I had gotten out of prison for possession of LSD, I went and saw the Talking Heads up in Seattle at the Seattle Center, you know, right by the Space Needle, whatever that arena is called there, Seattle Center Arena, I guess it was back then.
Yeah.
And we had no money. We were poor college students, and so we made counterfeit tickets. And I think the ticket was like $12.50 or something like that. So when David got there to the photo shoot, he was the first one. I told him the story about how I made, you know, a counterfeit ticket to get into the show. And I said, "I think I owe you $12.50. I said, "Here's a $20 bill with interest. I want to pay you back." And he looked at me, laughed, and said, no, you don't have to give me the $20. He goes, "I believe that the statute of limitations has expired." It was pretty funny.
Did you live in the dorms up there in Olympia at Evergreen?
I did not live in the dorms in Olympia. I lived in houses with people, with hippies.
Did you? Oh, that's lucky. Yeah, I went to Olympia for a National Federation of Community Broadcasters conference that was held there, because there's a radio station, another community radio station called Chaos up there.
Yep, I know all about it.
KOS, yeah, and they're, you know.
I made like a big, like, boutique Chaos banner for them back when I was in school that hung up in the radio station.
Oh, I might have seen it when I was there. They still had one of those, and I was just honored beyond belief to be able to stay in a dorm, because I didn't go to college where I would be in a dorm. And so for 3 days I got to kind of pretend I was in college again, even though I never went. And
yeah,
Evergreen is a beautiful campus and a real sweet
space. You know, I was there at a really wonderful time with a bunch of really wonderful, incredible hippies, really, essentially is what we were. And I was there from 82 to 85, and then I moved to the Bay Area and started my career and tried to, you know, make it as a rock and roll photographer, and I guess I succeeded. I guess I was fortunate enough to make it all work. My own particular brand of being on the spectrum, or, you know, my ADD or whatever it is. My magical powers
You're genius.
Push me through.
Yes, for genius.
I don't know. I don't think I'm on the spectrum, but, you know, I've got some sort of, you know, gave me a lot of drive and ambition to make it work.